Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. We're going to leave the rest of that conversation behind. We're going to move on because nobody else heard it, hopefully. I made some serious progress on my pool house.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Well, a couple of big things. One, yesterday I just finished the soffit, and on one side I did soffit around it, and the other side I did tongue and groove ceiling, like on the the pool equipment, and it looks so good. It looks so good.
It's so nice when you get a construction project buttoned up, or it gets buttoned up.
Yeah, it's looking less like a construction project and more like almost there. Yeah. So the last big thing is siding, and I ordered siding, and that feels like a really big deal to finally decide on the one I wanted, on the color that we decided on.
What'd you go with?
Get it ordered. It's a composite board and batten. So it's like, it's not vinyl, but it's the vinyl siding type of, you know, you nail one piece in, the next one snaps over it, and you nail in that flange. So it's that kind of thing, but it's a...
Vertical?
It's a... Do what?
It's going to go vertical.
Yeah, vertical board and batten, 12 inches wide, and it's insulated. So the back of it has it's probably about a half of an inch thick foam piece to insulate the outside of the building a little bit. And it's crazy because I did like a cost comparison trying to figure out what's the best, you know, because you can buy like Hardy panel or not Hardy panel, LP siding panel. I guess you could buy Hardy. And so I did a cost comparison of just the square footage using like engineered wood that you have to paint and you have to seal and you have to do all the stuff versus this composite stuff. And like the wood version was almost twice as expensive, which was really surprising to me because it feels like vinyl composite type non-wood things would be the more expensive option. But
yeah, there's so much physicality goes into creating that.
Yeah.
But you would assume.
Way cheaper, and it's pre-painted. It's not painted, but you know, it's finished. A color.
Yeah.
And so you don't ever have to paint it. And anyway, I'm excited because that thing is moving forward, and the unknown of the siding was kind of like one of those things that was really, I got to get this figured out. We got to decide. Jenny and I are historically bad at deciding on colors of things together. So it took a lot of work, but that's all moving
ahead. All of this videos, all the siding and everything?
Yep.
Oh, what?
So yeah, they're all videos. You know, I just finished up the soffit and the tongue and groove video, which is a really kind of hard thing to like figure out how to frame that from a thumbnail and title perspective. It was also hard to frame with a camera because every single shot was from the ground looking up at the bottom side of the roof the entire time. And it was a lot of, my shoulders are kind of sore because it was a lot of.
For clarification, the soffit is the underside of what hangs off the roof?
Yes.
Yeah, I never was under. And what is a gable? A gable is the point.
A gable is the, I don't know, probably. You're probably right.
Because we visited the House of the Seven Gables in Salem, which is like some witchy place. And I never knew what the gable was. And I think it's these things, these points.
Sure.
Yeah. Some
I have read all of the names for all of the parts of a roof many, many times. You seem like I would know them by now, but I just can't hang on to that info. So,
yeah. I've been with architects and builders where they're talking about soffits and gables and this and that. And I'm just like, okay. I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm not quite sure what they mean.
You just you know, keep the words in you and you can just throw them in every while. Yeah, fascia. Yeah. Eaves. Yeah,
exactly. What is an eave versus a soffit versus a...
So the eave is the structural part that hangs over the side of the building.
Uh-huh.
Any of that surround. The soffit is the underside of that eave. Mm-hmm. The fascia is the outside face of that eave.
Mm-hmm. That seems a little bit self-explanatory.
Yeah. Face. Yeah. So
fascia.
Yeah. That's the extent of my roofing knowledge. There you go. Anyway, so that's what I've been up to, working on that stuff. It feels good to move ahead on it.
Mm.
What are you guys doing?
I told you just now quickly when Dave dipped out for a second that I hired an architect for the graveyard house. I'm at a kind of I feel like I'm at a bit of a standstill with it. And I had my friend was going to be the architect, but he's just dragging. So I just need somebody that I could constantly ask and get an instant response from. And so I put my buddy on retainer. He's actually a professional architect, licensed engineer at New York State. And he helped me with the horse barn a little bit. And he helped me with some engineering difficulties in the big barn when we were going to put the second floor in. He helped me prepare to put in a second floor in the in the big barn before I went full blown with the horse barn. And I never followed through finishing it, but the room is now ready for it. We put in, he engineered this laminated beam that goes down both sides for about 60 feet in preparation for getting these open web joists. But I never followed through because all my money went into the horse barn, which I have no regrets. Everything's working out. But now he's going to go full speed on the graveyard house. And we talked about all the particulars, closets, bathrooms, and he's going to start working on drawings and stuff. And this way,
this is like layout, not just the roof or not just the.
Yeah, no, everything. He's going to do full drawings of everything. We discussed the open porch with a wraparound porch and where doorways should be and windows. And so I'm excited because that's going to really feel like the next step. Because I honestly got in the last couple of videos, I was like, I don't know what's next. I'm a little bit lost. I don't really know what's next. And so I'm happy that's moving through. So I feel like something's getting done in the dead of winter. And I got a new CNC machine, as many of you might have noticed on Instagram. I got a Onefinity Elite something. I got to study my advertising pitch, but it's the newest version of the 4x4, the most powerful one they make, which is it. And honestly, I've seen the machines a lot, and we go to shows, and I'm always hanging out with Morgan and Stone, and I think I met Ben once. These are all the guys that are the people over there, and we just hang out all the time. And Morgan's like, why don't you have one of our machines? I was like, I don't know. Why don't you give me one? And so anyway, we made it official this week. They came over, they assembled the machine and trained me on it. And I honestly really, really like it. I like it. It's a great machine. It's got this great interface. All your files are always just sitting there if you need them again, versus like everything else is always on some thumb drive somewhere. And anyway, it's working out. And I've been experimenting. So I don't know. You might have seen my stories. I did these... speaking of thumb drive, I have like four or five thumb drives that have every project I've ever done in the last 10 years on them, and they always kick around. And whenever I'm testing a new CNC machine or whatever it is, I just say, oh, what's on this thumb drive? So on this thumb drive had the manhole cover that I made a year ago. And so I started recutting that and playing around with that. And so I'm going to make them into pizza trays just for fun. It's like a New York City sewer cap pizza tray. So in this video, I'll do a few experiments. And then also this one, I don't know if you guys saw this, I'm not flashing you. Do you guys see this?
Oh, yeah.
We were hanging out over the weekend. These guys were here for a few days. And everyone's talking about belt buckles. Justin maybe was here and we were talking about belt buckles. And then, so we all started just coming up with ideas for belt buckles to cut on the CNC machine. We made about four brass belt buckles on the CNC machine. And now the guys at Onefinity are going to try and promote the idea of having everybody get some chunk of brass and make themselves a belt buckle. So I might make one or two more belt buckles for this video. Oh, and today is Wednesday. That's supposed to be a secret. Today's supposed to be Friday, but today actually in reality is Wednesday.
Oh no, the illusion is ruined.
But I completely forgot because when I send off a video for notes, as soon as my work is done and I hit that email, I'm like, on to the next thing. I completely forgot this previous 7 days of like nose to the grindstone on that project. So I sent my video off to Carolina Shoes, the branding iron. And I got the thumbs up. So with some notes in the description, with some links and stuff, which is what we were waiting for, I'm going to publish that video today. Even though it's a middle of the week, Wednesday, whatever, I'm publishing the branding iron video, which was my previous 7 or 8 days worth of work. I'm excited to get that video out and on to the next thing. I'm going to start working on a jacket. So my Patreon seen that I started cutting up fabric to make a Carhartt jacket. I'm going to duplicate or copy a Carhartt jacket. I'm not cutting the jacket up. I'm able to pull the patterns out of it without dismantling it.
Oh, and, really?
Yeah, just following lots and lots of, watching lots of videos of wow. how jackets and sleeves are sewn on and stuff. So I'm getting my full on education from YouTube, and I'm going to give it a try and make a jacket. Hmm. So that's going to be fun. That's coming up in probably in 2 weeks. So that's what I've been up to. And it's, it's winter. Stifling yeah. sometimes. sometimes yeah. Sometimes it hurts. But that's it.
Yeah. It's been pretty nice here the last week or so, but then the temperatures started to drop, you know, yeah. every day.
We had a nice day yesterday, and it got cold. And so, again.
Yeah, I was out there trying to finish up this stuff underneath the roof, and it's getting real windy, and I can just tell, like, tomorrow's going to be bad. I got to get this done. I don't want to be out here anymore. So, yeah, but it's done. What about you, David? What have you been doing?
I am still working on my floor lamp. It'll be finished today. We're going to finish filming it today. But like a floor standing, I guess it's a lamp, but it's like a slash art piece where the front of it is a big arrow. And in that arrow, there are hundreds of little arrows cut out. And then randomly there's pieces of acrylic behind those cutouts, three different colors of acrylic. And, it's one of those, this is rare for me. It's one of those projects where it's better than I expected. And we were filming yesterday and held it up to one of the camera lights just to see what it looked like. And I had this like, oh my goodness, this is way better than what it looks like on my computer, way better than how I pictured it in my head. This is coming out really good. And the new guy who's working with me, he's like, that's probably how all your projects go. And I'm like, oh no, I want to burn most of them. This is very rare when it comes out better than expected. And so, it's just, usually for me, when I get towards the end of the project, I'm just ready for it to be done and want to move on. And I've lost interest in the project, but, just seeing where it's going, it's coming out pretty good. I'm using opaque acrylic, which still lets a light through just enough where it has this like glow to it on the front. So you're going to have these three colors of glow on the front through all the little arrow cutouts. And on the back is just kind of like a regular light. So that back is going to push light up against the wall, and it's going to give it like this. It's going to highlight the whole arrow. So it'll light the room, but it will also create this like vignette of the light.
How are you creating the light? What is the light coming from? LEDs?
LEDs, yeah. So,
panel?
I'm kind of, that's what I'm doing today, is making the panel that's going to go inside the light. So it's about 4 inches wide. And it's got a lot of light go through on both sides. And so there's going to be a panel in the middle and basically just LEDs wrapped around that panel. So it gets light on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
I also, I have a couple lights that I've made. I like making lights, but I'm so worried about selling anything that involves electricity because it's my solder. It's almost like I want to give a disclaimer, like, hey, an idiot soldered this up. This could burn your house down.
You could, I mean, everything you buy has like a UL sticker and like, don't use this, you know, type of bulb and stuff. You could make a little sticker that just says an idiot soldered this and like stick it on the inside of the thing. If somebody buys it, they've got a warning, you know?
When I've made lamps funny. In the past, I've always kept them plugged in for like 3 days before I ever hand them off. Just to make sure there's no issues. I check the connections, make sure there's no heat buildup or anything.
Yeah, a lot of the LED lights, they recommend to not like mount directly on wood, but to have some sort of like aluminum channel. So if they do get warm, it kind of distributes that heat.
Oh.
So yeah. I don't know if this middle panel is going to be something that is going to be metal, or I don't know. I haven't had time to figure out how to build the inside. And I think I work best when I'm just under pressure and have to figure it out on the fly.
I don't know if this is helpful when you get to that point, but one thing you could do there is put the foil, metal foil that has adhesive back on it, and put that as the barrier in between. Yeah. And that would also act as a reflector.
Yep.
So it's going to like even out all the light, but it will help dissipate some of the heat and get it away from the wood a little bit. Not a ton. But.
That is, I might be doing that. So thank you. Yeah.
Yep.
So we got the new guy. He has, yesterday was his first day.
Oh.
And the plan was, nothing ever goes as planned, but the plan was when he got here, we were going to start a new project. And then he could take that footage and he could edit that video. But I'm still behind on the previous project that he had to start filming in the middle of something. And then there's deadlines. So I'm going to be editing this video. I still have to have another video done by the end of the month. So I will probably edit that next video. So the goal, February, he's going to start editing the first video. And I know we've talked about this, and I don't know where you're at in this, Bob, but I want to be 2 weeks ahead. By March or April, I want to be in a position where I am 2 weeks ahead.
I would like to be 2 years ahead. I hate the like up against it all the time. And me, it's, you know, it's definitely been this kind of growing and shrinking thing where like, yeah, like I'm like two videos ahead. And I can start on the next one. I got all sorts of time. And then it eats that up. And now I'm up against it. It's just a constant thing for me. But, I mean, I finished this video yesterday and it's for Saturday. So I'm up against it.
Usually, if but I
at the same time, video, like I do, I still do every 2 weeks though. Are you still trying to do weekly? You're not, right?
Right now, for a couple of years, it's mostly every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a third sponsor in there that I have to squeeze in. We want very much so, I want very much so to go back to weekly, which means.
I do about once a week on the average. Yeah. I'll skip. Like if I have like five, if I have a good run of like 5 weeks, I'll take a week off.
So I am trying to, I have some ideas. New ideas are really hard to execute, but I have some new ideas where we put out 4 videos a month or something every week, every Sunday. And I want to do this so I can pay for the new guy, because the new guy is working a lot. He's going to be working a lot more than the old guy. So putting out more videos potentially means more income because you have more AdSense, right? But I don't want to put out new videos just to put out new videos. I want each one to still hold value because they're all my little babies. So the goal is like 2 bigger projects a month, but then like 2 kind of like, I don't, like you had your in between the builds, something like that, something to vlog, something like a thought, or there's a lot of art pieces that I want to make that I don't think are worthy of a video, that don't have the interest of a video. But if I can combine that with like a thought that I have on creativity or a way that I work, I can kind of weave those 2 stories together to create something that's just a little bit quicker and doesn't take 2 weeks to shoot.
Right. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, for me, I admire that you want to add more and get back to more videos. I don't. After, you know, cutting my pace down to now every couple of weeks, it's just me personally. I don't want to go back to that ever. I really like having a little bit more room, and I wish I had more room, you know, to have more time to do some stuff that took a little bit longer, but. And at this point, that's about planning and less about that I don't have the time. You know what I mean? Like I have the time. I just have to figure out how to organize things to make things have longer than 2 weeks to get done. I just have to overlap them differently. So I admire that. I hope it works. I'm glad you got a new somebody to work with though. I hope that's a good thing.
Yeah. The funny thing is, this is the third person to work with. I've had 4 camera operators. This is the third one that has come from the local, cable sports network here in town. So I made the joke that, BCSN is the breeding ground for make something camera people.
There you go.
But yeah, he's a good dude. Our circle of friends overlap quite a bit. So it's somebody I kind of know. He's a musician. We have a lot of the same tastes. And so yesterday was a fun day. It's unfortunately like we use a variety of cameras and none of them are the same. So each camera is different. Each camera has a different menu system. And so there's going to be a lot of getting used to the rhythm of how I do things, although I'm open to new ways and where things go. And so that part is, it's going to slow me down for a little bit, but the plan is to get into a really good rhythm and work a lot less on the evenings and weekends.
Yeah. 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 There's growing pains with all that type of stuff, but
yeah,
just a new system to figure out. And once you get the system, it should alleviate some stuff for you, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's real cool. We had a patron hangout last night for I Like to Make Stuff. And one of the questions we were talking about, it's a guy, Dave, on there, that's always on there, had a question for me about something I said on here a couple weeks ago. I had to get him to like remind me what I said because I think people think that we remember all these conversations. We don't. I don't.
this happens all the time. Brian Prusa listens to the podcast the minute it comes out, and he'll text me or say something. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah. It was just on the podcast. I'm like, oh, yeah.
You said it 5 minutes ago. No, I didn't say it 5 minutes ago. Anyway,
he brought up
a question, which I thought was kind of interesting, and I had to think about how to answer it. So remember, I think it was last week or the week before, I was talking about how I would love to someday build the giant robot in the woods that's, you know, like it died up against a tree, and it's just an art piece. And so he was asking, in my response to that, he was asking, you know, do you feel like you shouldn't do something like that because of letting down audience, bringing in a new audience that will expect something that then you don't continue to deliver? I'm inferring that he didn't say that. Or is it financial? You know, are you worried about, you know, being able to make enough money with it? And so it was an interesting, he was asking why that was a thing that I was like, why I saw that as a risky thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so we got to talking about that a little bit. And as I was explaining and thinking out loud, I said something and then was like, oh, wait a minute. I think that's actually like more true about myself than I realize. The thing I said, and this isn't I just wanted to tell you, maybe it'll spawn a conversation. When it comes to art, one of the things that I think is different about the three of us, or me and the two of you, and people who look at art differently, I said something to the effect of, when I think about something like the robot thing that would be effectively an art piece, it would be cool if it existed, but I don't have this really passionate driving impulse to make it exist. Like, I'd like to see it. I love art. I went to art school. I understand, you know, why people are driven to create things purely from the, I need to create it, right? But when it comes to me doing that stuff, I don't feel that real passionate drive to follow through and make that happen because the world needs it to exist, or I need it to exist. I do feel that way about when I see a problem that could be solved to make something easier, faster, better, whatever. And that's when the thing inside me goes like spins up and goes, oh yes, this is something that should happen. It should be solved. And I'm going to do my best to get to that thing. But it was kind of an interesting realization that both of those things are absolutely valid in different people for different reasons. They accomplish different things and, you know, all that. But I never really thought about the fact that I don't have that passionate drive to create something so that it exists,
mm-hmm.
which is a different thing. And I think mm-hmm. that's why artists maybe seem a little kooky to non-artists, because they feel like something has to exist that doesn't exist, in the same way that I feel like a problem has to be solved that has not been solved. I don't know. Yeah. That was kind of an interesting thought. You guys got any thoughts on
that's
that?
That's an interesting way of looking at it, because I am sometimes envious when I see somebody that throws it all to the wind in an effort to make something that doesn't exist. Not necessarily saying, like, you know, in the way of an alcoholic, like friends and family, and it doesn't matter, this has to happen, but they risk it all, credit cards, everything, to make something. And a lot of that, I see a lot of that, a good example of that is Burning Man when you see these people feverishly making something out of metal or cars or whatever just for those 3 days. And I am a little envious of that deep passion. I definitely have that, some of that. But when I come up with certain ideas, and I'll think to myself, oh, that means I gotta start the backhoe.
Probably the, get a the battery. The practical steps in, and yeah.
You know, like, it means the battery's probably, and then if I get the battery, then I gotta go get starter fluid. Maybe the tires need air. And then all of a sudden, like the ADHD kicks in, and where I had this vision of standing up a giant chunk of wood in the backyard, which is a real vision I've had. I had this big giant timber I want to try and do as like a standing object. And I'm like, I gotta go get a piece of 4-inch thick steel. Yeah. All right. I'll do that one later. You know, that's kind of how my, yeah. Versus then like, oh, I could CNC a belt buckle. That'll take, I'll be done by lunch. I'll be able to be eating lunch in the kitchen by the time that's done. I definitely have those conversations in my head. So,
yeah.
But then I do something like stupid. Like I take on this complete house renovation when I know about half of what I'm doing. And I just think that I know I can get it done in little bits at a time. And if it takes forever, I have no end line. The audience might think I need one. They might be frustrated, and that's okay. It's just a long-term project. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. At any moment in this project, I could just pull the pin and sell it, and I'll still make my money back just because of the way the real estate market is. And if it crashes, I'll sit on it for 10 more years and sell it then. You know, it's not a bad investment to work on a real house, you know, with some real property.
Right.
So that doesn't make me panic.
For me, that's super deep. I need to make this passion. It comes and goes. And there's always a need to be making something. Like, yeah. I always feel like I have to have something on the table, on the bench at all times. Otherwise, I just feel like I am not doing what I'm supposed to be doing as a human being. But the deep passion for a project comes and goes. But I do know that when there is something in my head that just has to be made and I need to do this, I know, like, deep down, like, it is going to be worth it. Because it just feels like the universe wants me to make this thing. So that means I can sacrifice other things to make this thing and it's going to be okay. So I have, you know, like, you know, if you have to sacrifice time or money, it's all going to be worth it because of this burning desire to make it inside me. And one of the issues of doing this for a living and creating things that I want to create for a living is that wave of passion doesn't come as often because I get to satisfy myself with all these little builds in between. And so now I'm kind of thinking like my future art show is the project that I'm working on. It's the bigger passion. It's something bigger that I'm working towards. And so, I'm hoping to make more pieces than what I need and that I get to choose the best ones that represent me at that time. But, and then I'm not a very technical or good musician. But I just still have this deep craving for music all the time. I am always fidgeting or fiddling or tinkering with music. And it is so satisfying. But I have very little desire to finish a song or to put music out to the world. Because it feels like this is mine. This is my little getaway at home. So,
but it still needs to happen, just not
it
happen.
Still needs to happen.
Yeah,
there's many times I'm in the process of making something and I just think to myself, it's really sort of an OCD that I have to do it, and then I'm most likely not going to show it to anybody, and I'm not filming it, and in the process of making it, I'm thinking to myself, this is just me as a worker bee, just needing to fill space, needing to fill time. I'm passionate about what I'm doing. That happens a lot in the leather shop, where I really become obsessive about making a certain pattern or something I saw online. I have to make it just to say that I've either done it or just to gather the knowledge of doing it. Really all I'm trying to do is build skills, build muscle memory. When I make something, I right away try and make it again. But I do have that acknowledgement sometimes while I'm working on something. I'm like, no one's ever going to see this. This is just purely for my own problem solving skill development.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to do it and have to do it right. And the minute I make it, I'm like, all right, I see what I did wrong. Let me make it again. It's easy to do that in the leather shop when I have so many different types of materials sitting around me. And versus if you make a wooden drawer and you're like, oh, those dovetails came out like junk. Let me do that again. There, I'd be like, you know what? Next month, I'll make that again.
Right. Yeah.
The buffer of effort. And the buffer of effort is small. I jump right back into some.
One of the things that David was also mentioned when in this conversation the other night was like revenue streams. You know, was his question to the art creation on for me was, you know, are you worried about it not being a revenue stream in the same way that other things are? And and that's absolutely a legit concern. In that particular instance, you know, there's a lot of risk in the amount of effort and cost and time that I would have to put in that it would return enough money, because ultimately my goal here is to provide for my family, not to be creative. I mean, it is to be creative, but the bigger priority is like provision, yeah. Right? So that is a concern, but it got us talking about, I think all of us, this whether we've spoken it, fully thought through it or not, the whole goal of products and of doing these other things, these other revenue streams, is to build them up enough that they could theoretically match, replace the video stuff, so that then that would open up the freedom of video to not be consequential, you know, like the freedom that we would have in, yes, I want to create a thing that takes forever and nobody may watch it, but it won't matter because my life is not, you know, hanging on the result of the output of whatever this thing is. And so, like, I think that's a legit concern for all of us who create things, is that, you know, there's a, as independent and creative and honest as you think you are, want to be, intend to be, there's still a, yeah, but it's my job. It's my living. And I have to temper all of those things against, is it going to be enough? Are enough people going to watch it? Is it going to get the click, the view, the money, the whatever, because that's how I live, pay for life, right? So it would be an awesome trade-off to be able to set that aside, to separate the, does it make enough money for me to live, and the, I need to create this so that it is created or so that somebody has it or whatever, and separate those two things so that we could just have the freedom. And it would be really, really interesting to see from the three of us and a lot of other people that we know, if you had true creative freedom and your livelihood was not bound to it in any way, what would you do? Like, yeah. What craziness would happen? What ingenuity would happen if you didn't have to temper your thoughts and your goals against? Yeah. And I mean, that's what patronage is all about. That's where the whole, like, you know, I mean, that's how Michelangelo was able to do what he did, because somebody said, hey, I'm going to pay for your life. Go do your thing. Awesome. You know? So I get that is it's not a new concept that I'm coming up with or anything, but it would just be amazing to see what people actually did. Well,
it's
right
funny
now.
You should say that, because as I brainstorm and as I experiment and tinker, it's always geared towards what could be a product. And I use the leather as a good example. When I started playing around with making the leather bags, I have probably $10,000 worth of inventory sitting in my leather shop right now that didn't sell through Christmas, but it's sitting there. And the other night I had some friends bring over some other friends. A few people bought bags straight away with cash. So the idea that I keep creating and keep iterating and keep having fun with it, whether it sells or not, I know eventually, to me, it's currency. It's sitting there. it's currency. I mean, I just spent $3,000 on new leather, came in, and I immediately started cutting it up and making new ideas. The sales aren't, it's not hand over fist right now. There's almost no sales at all, which is fine, because when somebody comes up, for instance, the guy who does all my backhoe work around the yard, he's like, I got to get my wife a gift. He goes, what are those leather bags? Can I see one? I was like, here you go. I traded him 2 leather bags for work in the backyard. So for me, that's currency.
Yeah.
And people that come up and they're like, oh, I like this, but I'm like, you know what? Let's look. How can we barter? How can we trade? And so, you know, it's, for me, it's currency, but I'm also getting my skills development in making the leather bags, making a real product. But you're right in the idea that if I was sitting on no worries to pay my bills, would I break out a canvas and make a painting? I don't know if I have that ability to do that, because I've been so conditioned to just constantly make things that could be a product or that or utilitarian, I guess is the real word. Everything I make that's artful is utilitarian. I'm not making a painting to hang on the wall. I'm not photographing a picture to try and sell as purely aesthetics. I do that constantly with photography and obviously with video, but I'm not. It's not my motivating artistic factor. Everything in one way or another ultimately ends up being utilitarian.
Yeah.
It's like the overarching thing for everything I do. Like I'm making this silly, manhole cover. The first project I did last spring was to try and learn how to do casting. So that was the end goal for that. Now I'm making them again in MDF and painting them and epoxying them. I'm like, okay, it's going to be a pizza tray. You know, people associate New York and pizza, sewer cap, you know, so it's a stupid pun in a few different directions. But once I wrap a rationale around it, I don't feel quite as much as I'm wasting my time on something that's not utilitarian. Right. And I don't necessarily feel like I'm wasting my time, because again, I'm always skill building, but I'm like, what is the reason for this? What is the real purpose of this? That's why I kind of am looking at my desk right here. You know, a lot of guys make the trading coins. You know, I'm not big on the coins, because what do you do with it? You stick in your pocket. Pry open. It's a paint can prior opener. Okay. Now I have a reason to make sure I
get more. Yeah.
I'm going to make paint can prior openers. So there's always that little excuse that I need to keep moving on a project.
David, you were going to say something.
Yeah. I don't know what I would do with unlimited freedom. It's really hard for me to understand what I would do, because I have unlimited freedom when it comes to music, and I'm fidgeting and fiddling and tinkering all the time. And nobody ever hears it. I don't know if nobody ever hears it because it's just for me, or if it's because I don't think it's good enough for other people to hear it. So if I had unlimited freedom to make physical things, whatever I wanted, what would I do? I think I have to have a purpose. There has to be a reason. So I need the job to get me to make the things, because I have to make the thing, because not only do I want it, because I need to make a living. And so making art for art's sake, or making a piece of furniture just to make a piece of furniture, I don't know that that fills a passion in me, because there has to be a reason.
Yeah, I wonder if who knows? And it's different for everybody. I think everybody looks at this from different points on a spectrum, right? Like all of this stuff is individual. but I think it could be that it's hard for us. I think this is what Jimmy was saying. It's hard for us to disassociate our current reasoning for things and the things themselves, you know? And it's hard to imagine, if I didn't have to, would I? If I didn't have to, what would be, even if I had to still have a reason, what would the new reason be? And I don't know that there's any worth in trying to figure that out or not, but it's interesting to think about, you know, if you really had to pull away the it pays my bills thing, the passion to make stuff is still going to be in there, and finding a new reason to make that justified would probably be easier than we think. It's just really hard for us to step outside of the current, you know, we have to do it to live kind of thing.
Do I speak for all three of us when I say the passion is the work and not the outcome?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Which says something, you know, to why you do it and why you would continue to do it if you didn't have to make money from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we would find new reasons to need to do the work, I guess. But I think the work, at least for me, you know, the work would change if I didn't have a deadline because it was related to money and all of those things. I think I would explore further on things. I would take more time. I would put more effort into smaller details that I can easily justify skipping over, passing by, you know, doing things at 80% or whatever. And so it would definitely change how I did things, maybe not necessarily what I'd do. Maybe it would. I don't know. This is very theoretical. Who knows? But another thing you said earlier, and I don't even remember what you said, but it triggered a thought in me about how, you know, we get to make things on a regular basis all the time. And at first, at least for me, that was really easy because it was obvious I need a thing that goes right there. I need a thing that does this. And then we've been doing this long enough that we don't need any more tables and we don't need any more bookshelves and we don't need any more, you know, this and desks. And so it comes to a point where you're just like all of those.
Tap cutting boards.
Yeah. All of those needs we've filled for the most part.
Oh, and you guys just don't buy new houses and start building furniture for new houses?
Sometimes.
But, you know, I mean, that's sometimes, like a thing, yeah, where, you know, you solve problems and then you start to have to look for either more difficult problems or smaller problems, right, or other people's problems. You know, you have to start changing what you're looking for. And when I'm just thinking about somebody who has a 9-to-5 who doesn't get to make the things that they want all the time. They still want them. They just don't have the opportunity or the tools or the whatever to make them. And I can imagine that a lot of the things that we get to do feel like really far off. Man, if I had the time, I would build that arcade cabinet. I would restore that truck. You know, I would make the art piece. I would do the thing.
A-frame. That,
but it feels like
robot.
But it feel to them, I can imagine it would feel like I'm just never going to get there because it's not realistic, right? It's far off, and it's easy to justify not being able to do that. And we're in a really blessed position to where those far off things on a weekly basis get closer to us. We get rid of the low hanging fruit. We do the tables and the bookshelves and the things, and those things that are far off just get closer and closer. And at least for me, I'm at a point where I'm running out of excuses not to do the big, long-term, far-off thing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so in regard to the robot thing, I can recognize that I'm going to run out of excuses to not do something like that eventually. Eventually. I'm not there yet.
Well, every time we talk about the robot, I think of Colin.
Which is a blessing. I'm saying that as a, like, wow, I'm really grateful that I get to run out of excuses for stuff like that. That's amazing.
I was going to say, every time we talk about the robot or the transformer, like a life-size transformer, I think of Colin Furze and how driven he is to make the wackiest, kookiest, craziest SHI beep beep to, and how he's so driven and how infectious that is. Every time I watch one of his, I'm like, I'm going to go dig a tunnel. And then I'm like, yeah, my backhoe probably needs a battery.
You know, you say my back. Yeah. It would be one thing,
but that's that insane desire to create, just to create. Yeah. Of course, you know, he does well on his channel, but he's really has all the chemistry to make the craziest, wackiest stuff with the most insane intention and energy. That's why we all love him. That's why his channel's so big.
And even if he could do well on his channel and still not have that thing that you're talking about. Like, that's possible, but he is wired in a way that is very, very different.
Well, he has a great combination of concepts and drive. Like the good concept, the drive, and his practical approach to engineering this, you know, it all comes together for him. It's great.
Yeah.
It does take two. There's two major factors, the concept and the drive. Like Bob's concept for the robot is beautiful. I love the idea. So many people love that idea. But if you don't have the drive to do it, it's not going to come out as good as you want it to come out.
Yeah.
Until you have that proper drive.
Yeah. And I get drive for things like that by planning. Some people don't. Some people, you know, they care about it and they just go start and then they figure it out along the way. And I'm that way to a degree, but like I would get excited about that project or something like that once I've got kind of like an angle of attack. Like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to justify it? How am I going to pay for it? You know, once I get that stuff, then it becomes more realistic.
It needs to have a bigger problem. There needs to be something within it that is a problem that you don't know how to solve just yet.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yep. So, have I told you about the suspension bridge idea?
Mm-hmm. No.
Okay, so like that property, thing? Well, not really. That property out there it's ridges. So there's a flat area where the barn is, but then it drops off and goes down into a ridge, and there's a creek down there, and then it goes up. It goes down into like a valley, and then it goes up into a ridge, and then down again, and then up again. Like, it's barely flat. There's barely a flat spot on it at all. And so to get from one corner to the other, you have to go, if you go straight from like as the crow flies, you have to go all the way down, then all the way up, then all the way down, then all the way up. And it's hard work. Or you follow the trail and it goes around in a big circle and it goes around kind of the perimeter of the thing, but it's a little more even. So there's not a really good direct way to get from one corner to the other corner where there is a high spot on a ridge, which would make an amazing camping spot or tiny home A-frame type spot, something. So getting to the place that would be the most conducive for those things is pretty difficult. And so I was thinking about, well, what if I made a suspension bridge that went from the barn and skipped the valley part and just went directly to the next ridge? And there again, I'm bringing this up because the problem was, how do I get over there reasonably? Like if I wanted to build something up there, even like a little thing, how would I get to that without just backbreaking hiking with gear and all this stuff? And then it was like, yeah, a bridge. You can make a bridge.
Army Corps of Engineers that long. Get them in there.
It would have to be, do what?
The Army Corps of Engineers. They build a bridge in 10 minutes.
Yeah. Or a helicopter. You can get a helicopter. Yeah. But anyway, it led me, because there was a problem to solve, it led me through, you know, how are suspension bridges made? How does that work? How do you calculate all these different things? And I've barely begun to understand how it all works and everything. But then we went to, we stopped in Tennessee over the summer or sometime at a place called Fall Creek Falls. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of, there's a state park in Tennessee. Anybody that ever has the chance to go there, absolutely beautiful. It is a wonderful place. And we just stopped on our way home and stayed overnight in the lodge, which was amazing. It's a really cool mid-century style lodge, you know, and we did some hiking in a couple of different places there. And there's the largest free or the tallest unimpeded waterfall in the United States or something like that. And it just like pours off the top and then falls for several hundred feet down into a pool. It's a gorgeous place. While we were there, we were crossing this river, something, flowing water. I guess it was a river. And there was a suspension bridge that went across it. And so we walked up to it. We're hiking and everything. The kids cross and they're like all, you know, bouncing on it and watching. And I stopped at the end of it. I was like, I'm next to a suspension bridge. This is my chance to understand how it works. Yeah. So they kept walking and I just stood there and I took pictures of it. And I'm like, okay, how does this actually work? Not like logically on paper, looking at the materials, what is connected to what, where's the tension going, and all this type of stuff. And it was really, really cool. But that all came from you know, in that random moment that I just happened to find a bridge that all came from what you just said, there was a problem that I didn't need to solve, but it would be cool if I could figure out a solution, and it led me down this big long path of, you know, exploring things to the point where I've priced materials and
How
stuff.
Long is this, by the way? How far?
Very, very far.
100 yards or less?
Probably 70 or 80 yards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be.
I don't know that it's a realistic thing to do. Don't hear me saying that. Don't hear me saying like this is a plan and everybody's going to be like, yeah, you got to look at the thing. Yeah, I'm not. It's in the county. It's fine. Yeah, anyway, so I don't know that that's something I'm going to do, but it was a thought that led me down a path of, you know, like, oh, how does this
work? I know
work?
You're not going to make
and,
it,
and
but...
that's the stuff that actually gets me excited about, not just the world needs a suspension bridge right there. It's like a specific,
yeah,
I'm air quoting, problem. You know, how can I solve that specific moment, that place, that thing, not that, like, the world needs me to
what
do
would...
a...
What would be some of the qualifications? Would you need to drive a car on it or a 4x4?
No,
or?
Just like a walking bridge. No.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, a walking bridge. That makes sense.
Yeah. But how cool. I mean, like, to go through the top of the trees, you would have a bridge that would take you from one high point to the other. And when you're in the middle of it, the ground is probably 70, 80 feet below you, maybe more
Ooh.
Than that. Like, you would, it would just be so cool. So
you need to get like, you need to like get two old trucks as your mooring points on either side. Something heavy.
Two robots that are sitting back to back.
They're holding like they're doing double Dutch. They're holding the strings.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
The suspension cables.
Yeah. Like the bridge is just being tethered to these two giant metal bodies that are just never going to move. Like, that would be so cool. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway. So, Dave, not you, Dave, the other Dave, thank you for bringing that up. That was a cool, it got me thinking far past the actual conversation itself, but, you guys got any other thoughts on this? I don't even know what exactly we're talking about, but.
Do I ever know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, fair enough. Cool. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters because they're awesome. Huge thanks to them. Both the Patreon supporters here for the podcast because they support the show, but also the other ones that support us individually, and a lot of them are, you know, crossover, because they all send us responses and comments and questions on this show. I forwarded to the guys this week at least a couple of different comments from patrons about different stuff we've talked about, you know, suggestions and different things. So thank you all for that. Just because if I don't respond to your message through Patreon does not mean that we don't see it. I just don't get a chance to respond. I always pass it on to who it needs to go to. So we're really grateful for the support and for the interaction we get with all the people from Patreon. So thank you all very much. Especially grateful for the financial support of our top supporters. That's Works by Solo, Warren Works, The New Janky Workshop, Scott, a Daddy-Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondo, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Michael Menegin, Corey Ward, Chris McCormick, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also, Terrence Archer. And people like Terrence and other people that support us at every level. We're really grateful for all of you. And everybody gets the after show regardless of what level you support at. Go to patreon.com/makingit. Pick whatever level works for you of support. And then once you sign up, you'll get a link up in the, I believe it's the top right, for the after show podcast. You can put that in your player. There's also links for the video version of it if you want to watch us instead of listen to us. I guess you get to both listen to us and watch us in that case. But you know what I mean. So you can go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up, help us out. We are very grateful.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have like three or four picks this week.
Slow down.
Yeah, no. Sorry.
I only have one, so I'll go first. I'll say quick.
Okay. Go for it.
Everybody check out DTB Fab, Dave. Dave's my buddy. Dave helped me this year with the car. I might have mentioned him before, but every time Dave shares information, it's incredible knowledge. So Dave is so smart. He's so experienced in so many things, and he's so humble. You wouldn't know it unless you squeezed it out of him. But occasionally he's getting more loose with the info on his Instagram. So check out DTB Fab on Instagram. he's very, very smart when it comes to mechanical stuff. And I always say it, and I'll say it just to honor him. Any of the tradesmen, the guys that do heating and plumbing, it's usually air conditioning, heating and plumbing all tend to go together. They are the smartest tradesmen by far of all of them because they have to know everything. They have to know construction because they don't want to cut a beam. They have to know plumbing, of course, because that's their job. But they also have to know electric. They have to know so many things. And they have the answer to so many things. And Dave falls into that and throw in some car knowledge or all the car knowledge on top of that. So go check out Dave. And if you have any questions, he's usually very, very helpful and happy to help.
Awesome.
So thanks, Dave.
So mine, it's not a build video. He's just showing off this Infinity Mirror guitar. Has this come up in your feed at all?
I don't think so.
It's, I like the concept more than I don't think I would play a guitar like this. It's a little too flashy, but I love the idea of this.
This is cool.
Just a modified guitar to have like an Infinity Mirror built in. I watched the video without sound because I just wanted to see it, so I don't know what he talks about. I'm assuming he did it, and it looks really cool.
Awesome. Cool. All right, so I got a couple, and these are weird. One is called Tape Bowing Ensemble, and it's these three or four guys, I don't remember exactly, and they're using reel-to-reel tape machines with a piece of tape tied to like a stick at the top of the stick. It goes through the tape machine back to the bottom of the stick. So they're using the whole thing as a bow. And then they have a keyboard that is changing the pitch. And so they're using the tape through the player as a bow, and they're moving their arms, and there's like a few of them playing different things, and they play together, and it's so weird. It's so cool. So that's one thing. The other one is, I think, one of the same guys. I'm not positive it's the same guy, but, and it's called Electric Harp Fan, and it's the video is like longer than it should be, in my opinion, but you can watch the beginning of it just to kind of get the feeling for what's happening. Basically, he took a fan, like like would be on a stick that you'd put in your bedroom to blow in your face, like just a standalone fan thing. He holds it like a guitar. He replaced the blades with some sort of a metal something that spins, and then he has like a guitar pickup type thing in his hand that he moves up and down the fan blades to get different pitches.
I saw this. Yeah, this is
it's
really
so
wild.
Weird. It's so weird, but it's really, really cool just to see somebody doing weird stuff with music. So there's both of those, and then me and the kids were watching this the other day. This will just make your life better. It's an SNL skit with Christopher Walken called Googly Eyes Gardner.
That's amazing.
If you've never seen it, you need to go watch it right now because it will make everything about your day quite a bit brighter. It's hilarious.
Christopher Walken on SNL has been one of the funniest guest hosts. He's like so careless when it comes to reading the cue cards, but yet he's still so funny.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
I have this modified little cassette player, and it has a CV in and out. And so you record a long drone, like with a synth, and then you put that on a cassette, you put that in this cassette player, and you have a knob that you can control the pitch of that tone. Oh. Or with the CV in here, you can hook up a MIDI keyboard, and you can control the speed of the cassette with the keyboard. So you can get these weird lo-fi, creative, stringy type sounds.
Yeah. Maybe that's a similar idea to what they were doing. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen similar stuff. Maybe I've seen exactly what you're talking about. There's a guy, I quickly tried to find him, but I can't think of the name. It's something Machines. And I'm a Patreon supporter. I just can't remember his name, but he is making a cassette keyboard. So you record your drone sound on a cassette, and then it'll have little like 3D printed keys, and each key will control the speed to play a pitch, and that pitch is going to be matched to like a chromatic keyboard. People just doing really cool, weird stuff with music. I love that stuff.
Yeah. We found several other things, but I'll save them for the after show.
All right.
But yeah, so go check out all those. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Love you.